I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Blue Jays Nation Radio
with Cam Lewis and Tyler Yaremchuk,
a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Welcome into episode 73 of Blue Jays Nation Radio, presented by DoorDash. Promo code BJNPODDD gets first-time users of the app 25% off and no delivery fees. I am supposed to be joined by Tyler Yaremchuk. You know what? I was actually kind of thinking, because it's BK Brendan joining me on the podcast today, I was kind of thinking we should probably get a different intro made up for the times that Tyler abandons me. Because the intro, like little jingle thing says his name, but he's not here. It's very misleading. We should honestly just get another one made up. Where do you
have
your... Either your name specifically or like a guest or something.
Well, I'll take my name on there. Absolutely. Yeah, it's playoff hockey time. I can imagine Tyler's quite busy and happy to step in, as I'm not all that invested in what's going on in hockey. So let's talk baseball.
I was just saying that we were just chatting before going over our notes, and I told Brendan, I was like, you are very blessed not being dealt with the curse of having to pay attention to and care about playoff hockey. Because Tyler right now, Tyler's gone because he has to pay attention to the Oilers game. He has the misfortune of dealing with that. And it's a mentally exhausting thing, man. Like the Jays have been a tiring team to follow thus far. It's been a good April and early May. I'm not complaining about where the Jays are at all. Quite happy. But that with playoff hockey at the same time is intense. I could imagine. Brendan, you're probably feeling pretty tired right now, but for perhaps different reasons beyond sports.
Yeah, I'm going to say that the Blue Jays aren't the number one reason. I'm a little tired. I just welcomed a baby boy, Henry, April 12th. So just about 3 weeks ago now, or a little over 3 weeks ago, and he's doing well. And he's pretty tired and sleepy around Blue Jay time. So I just get a little snuggle, get to watch the Blue Jays, and it lets me not get my heart rate up too much because looking after him. But it's a good time in our household over here.
Well, I'm glad you found the time to come on and talk Blue Jays with us, because we've got an interesting series to chat about. And 3-up, 3-down, I'm going to do kind of differently this time, because the first part of that Yankees series was very bad. There was the first game in which the Jays kind of just got edged out in the ninth inning. It was unfortunate, but not the end of the world. And there was the second game, which was, in my opinion, probably the worst game of the year thus far. The Jays got pounded 9-1, and there was some weird umpire missed calls, mistake calls. But then in the finale, they came back in the game that on paper kind of seemed like the automatic loss. The Jays were on the verge of getting swept. They come out, win 2-1. So how do we feel about this Yankees series so far? Because they split the first four games in New York, 2-2, and then New York rolls in, almost pulls off a sweep.
I'm feeling good about my preseason prediction about the Yankees are probably a little better than people are giving them credit for. They're a bit of a pitching factory. They just have these pen arms and guys like Nestor Cortez today that they throw out there, and they're really effective. It seems like they're really good at developing unique pitches, effective sliders, stuff like that, and just being really good arms. So their offense is all right. They're a very underrated pitching team. And the Blue Jays were unfortunate to catch them when they're red hot, right? Like they, you know, entered the series, winning 9 in a row, I believe, or 8 in a row, and they won the first two here. And then the Jays get them 2 games next week as well. So, not the time you want to face a division rival when they're red hot. When the Blue Jays aren't going to be hitting at all, you can't expect to win many games. Quite frankly, it's good to walk away with one win here. And like you said, winning the Kikuchi start of all of them is pretty stunning. But we'll take it. It was really good to see Kikuchi look effective, right? Like he was really good. It wasn't just, he didn't, you know, fluff his way through that outing or give up a lot of hard contact that lined into outs. He was good. He was getting strikeouts, keeping them off balance. And outside of the Gallo home run, he was incredibly effective. So I think that's probably the biggest positive to take away is how well he looked.
So we'll start with the downs. And okay, but one thing that I wanted to point out before this was, so when the Yankees were on their winning streak, it was all against shitty teams, right? It was like Baltimore, Kansas City. I think Detroit was in there too. And then kind of coming into this series, we thought like, oh, geez, like, are the Yankees frauds? Like, are they actually this good? You know, they won 10 consecutive games, but against no good teams. But I think now we can pretty confidently say, yeah, the Yankees are legit. And it's kind of also a shame because the Rays, meanwhile, are also heating up. So things are already getting pretty intense in the AL East. Anyways, we're going to start with the downs before I start rambling off. The number one thing that was kind of just present in this series was just the bats. It felt kind of hopeless. It felt like it was impossible for the team to score a run. They scored two in the first game, one in the second, then two again in the third, which is the win. So five runs all told. And it's just, where is the offense gone? When is it going to click? Is it the team really missing Teoscar Hernandez that much? So like, is it the case where Teoscar comes back and then bats are going to click, or is there more to it than that?
Yeah, I mean, he's the one big change that you can see coming that doesn't affect, or that isn't just about, you know, a reversal of luck or, you know, good hitters getting hot and returning to their norms or getting runner in scoring position luck too, right? Like the Jays have been, I believe, the worst team in baseball at hitting with runners in scoring position. So that's not going to continue. It just can't. And they're a good hitting team, so it wouldn't make sense for that to be the case. So, I mean, there's reason to just be optimistic that there's going to be good fortune or a little better fortune moving forward. But yeah, Teoscar is a critical part of the lineup, and he lengthens it by, you know, one. And in a lineup of nine where you're batting Capra, Heinemann, and Zimmer in the bottom of it, adding another bat like Teoscar there, your four hitter, is going to go an awful long way. So it's good to see that he's doing well, in his rehab starts down in Dunedin. He had a home run yesterday on Tuesday, his first game, and a double. Today, I know he hit a double. I didn't check to see how he finished the game, but at least three extra base hits in his two games. So I'm guessing he joins the guys in Cleveland for Thursday, and hopefully he's in the lineup as soon as tomorrow. That would be my hope. But yeah, the offense is just tough to watch, right? They're not stringing together hits. And you look at numbers like Vladdy and Springer are, you know, maybe just a touch below what you would expect of them, like season long numbers. But Vladdy's been scuffling for a couple of weeks now. He's you know, he had that nice rocket into center field today. But other than that, he's been hitting a lot of choppers and ground balls and just not getting into the baseball like he normally does. Bo Bichette's finally turning it around, which like that's good to see, and you could use a hot streak from him. And then, yeah, like Gurriel, Chapman are probably a little bit less than you would expect. Espinal's, you know, solid, but he's not, you know, an elite hitter. And then, yeah, when you just have the bottom of the order that's really empty, like it was in the Wednesday game, and in a lot of games we've seen, that's where it hurts you. So, Alejandro Kirk, I think that's the one bat they really need to get going. Because he's so much better of a hitter than what he's shown so far this year.
His spray chart.
That's what we need to see. Yeah, he's a weird profile, right?
Yeah, it's really weird.
It's hard to make sense of. And like his strike zone discipline has been solid and all that stuff. But he's not hitting anything with authority. And he's had a couple in recent games. So again, hopefully he's turning it around in the same way Bo appears to be. But yeah, just soft contact for days. Infield choppers, and yeah, just not the hitter we saw the moment he was called up and when he made his debut in 2020 and last year. So yeah, he's kind of my X factor of who, you know, they need to see them get going. And if you pair that with Teoscar returning very quickly, the offense could look quite strong.
So the second down that I had, and I'm not sure if I really need it to be a down now because I wrote some of these notes before the game. And I wanted to talk about how bad the umpiring was in game two, specifically when there was a rundown between third and home and Vladdy clearly tagged the runner out. They just called him safe and the Yankees scored a run. And then there's no out on that play. And then they go ahead and pile on like six runs in the inning and the game's just completely lost. Like, I don't think the Jays would have come back and won that game, no. But it really felt like, it felt bizarre to miss a call that obvious, right? Like it doesn't feel like that really happens anymore.
Well, and what I wondered about that play was look, if the umpire just has a bad sight line of seeing what happened and they have to make a judgment call and they make a mistake on that, whatever. But there was two things the umpire missed on that play, because the runner had severely vacated his established running lane to get out of the way of that tag. And that one is the obvious one that the umpire was in position to call, because he saw just how far inside of the baseline the runner was. And then he pulled back in to the other side of the baseline, probably 7 feet different change of direction, which is way outside of what you're allowed to do. So on top of the tag, which again, let's just give him the benefit of the doubt and say, for whatever reason, he had a poor sight line to make an accurate call. And unfortunately, the Jays didn't have a challenge to contest it. That there was an out call to be made there simply because of the established rules for running within your established baseline or base lane. So yeah, it was ugly. Vlad was quite frustrated, quite animated, with good reason. And it was weird to see an inning just fall apart in the way it did. The Jays weren't going to win that game. It seemed they were flat offensively again. And at that point, you know, the Yankees were in position to take the lead and things fell apart, but umpiring's got to be better than that. And it's too bad there isn't a way for something that obviously incorrect to then get changed because one, you know, replay has been lost, you know, the one challenge has been lost. So
at the very least, frustrating. At the very least, I will say it's a positive. And this is why I didn't really want to rag on it too much. I wasn't as upset about it for the following day, but it seems like they kind of got a bit of a makeup call in game three when Jimmy Garcia was pitching. And
what are you talking about? No, that was legit.
That was a bit of a makeup call. And then Aaron Boone just loses his mind. It's like, Boone, you cannot be getting that mad after how favorable the umpiring was for you in the previous game. Like, that was a hilarious meltdown to see. And then, okay, so the third up, and this is a controversial one. I kind of wanted to bring it up when you were talking about Alejandro Kirk just there. So it's the seventh inning of the first game of the series. And the score is tied at 2-2. And Alejandro Kirk draws a leadoff walk. And they have Bradley Zimmer on the bench. And then with two outs, Tyler Heineman inexplicably hits a double in which Kirk's obviously not scoring from first. But you'd think if they pinch ran for Bradley Zimmer, he probably would have scored. Do you think this was an egregious mistake by Charlie Montoya? Or do you think this is fine? Because Kirk did come up to bat again in the ninth inning. And yeah, None of us would have been happy to see Zimmer batting there. But
so when things like this happen, I try to go to what my thoughts are in the moment so that I can't have some reactionary take of, yeah, obviously they should have pinch ran Zimmer, given what we know kind of how the inning played out. In the moment, I was like, yeah, I'd probably lean with pinch running Zimmer here, but it wasn't one of those manager decisions where I looked at it as egregious either way. I think there's an argument to be made, like you said, you know, Kirk coming up again, it's just him being at first base. And I mean, interestingly, there was no damage or anything until there were two out, where I definitely wouldn't have, you know, ran him for, you know, with Heineman up to bat with two out. But yeah, I mean, you know, maybe Zimmer steals a base, right? Like maybe he finds a way to get a stolen base, and that then leads to the Heineman hit, you know, for sure being a run scored. It was one of those like kind of line drives inside the baseline that bounces off the sidewall that even a fast runner might not have scored on that. So there's no guarantee in that way, but yeah, like I said, there's other ways the inning could have played out where Zimmerman advances a base and then is in position to score. So yeah, in hindsight, incorrect move. In the moment, I didn't hate it. I it's not the decision I would have made, but I didn't feel it was egregious. I know some did. But yeah, that's just kind of how I felt in the moment seeing that play out.
We're going to talk a whole bunch more about Bradley Zimmer, because there's a question here I was going to ask, but I feel like it's going to result in a pretty decent sized tangent. So I'll save it for later when it comes up, but that's the three downs. So we'll jump into the three ups and we'll kind of bomb through these. Basically, the three ups are kind of just that whole third game all told. There was a lot of stuff to like about that game. The number one, obviously, being the Kikuchi rebound start. He really hadn't put together a good start yet at all this season. He didn't really look like the kind of pitcher that the Blue Jays thought they were going to get when they signed him to a 3-year contract in the offseason. But finally, this time around, he does 6 innings, 1 earned run on 3 hits and 1 walk. I think the 1 walk is kind of the real exclamation point here. And then 7 strikeouts as well. And honestly, it kind of looked like he probably could have even gone a little bit deeper, but I don't blame Charlie for just getting 6 and pulling it there. So what was different about Kikuchi's pitching tonight?
Yeah, he seemed to have conviction in his stuff. He was way more in the zone, in and around the plate, and he was getting ahead of Yankees, which allowed them to then chase his, you know, his splitter he mixed in some, and the slider that he's working on, and it was nice. You could see what the team dreamed on, right? Because when he signed the contract, you're like, okay, the numbers don't necessarily justify this contract at the same time. 3 years, $36 million, $12 million a year for a pitcher is like a number four starter money.
Tanner Rourke money.
Maybe, yeah, Tanner Rourke money, right? So maybe a year longer than you would want to give somebody with that profile. But at the same time, I mean, you watch a start like he did, like he had on Wednesday, and you see what the Jays are betting on and what they're hoping they can hone in and develop. And I have a lot of friends who are Mariners fans, and they call it the roller coaster and false hope and glimmer of hope and stuff like that. Even today, they're like, oh, enjoy your glimmer of Yusei Kikuchi hope. So I know he's been a roller coaster his whole career. So, you know, I don't think we can look at him and let's say he strings together a couple good starts. We're like, oh, Pete Walker fixed him, because Mariners fans would be like, oh, let me tell you, we thought he was fixed about 800 times and then he lets you down. So, yes, I'm cautiously optimistic just based on seeing with our own eyes a good Kikuchi outing that was really encouraging. And here's hoping he can string together a couple more. And he lines up to face the Yankees again his next start. So he's going to be Yankee Stadium, I guess that's next Tuesday. Yeah, I mean, that'll be the third time Yankees will have seen him in like a span of what, like 5 weeks?
That's not ideal.
No, that's not ideal at all. So that'll be a big measuring stick game. If he can come out and be effective there like he was in this final game of the series, then, you know, that again, just reason for optimism. But it was really nice to see first pitch strikes, him being around the zone, him using that fastball effectively, pairing it with some of his off-speed pitches. And it was a great start. I'm really glad that he got the sixth inning. Like you said, he finished with 78 pitches. He certainly could have pitched in the seventh, or possibly could have. But even like given how tight his leash has been so far, he gave up a leadoff double, I believe, in the sixth inning, right? So the fact that he still got to finish that inning out was pretty encouraging. And it was, I mean, good for him to get there as well.
Speaking of the sixth inning, I want to specifically give an up to Tim Mayza, who is just kind of, I wouldn't say out of the blue, because there was hype when he came up, right? But it's a little bit out of the blue because, you know, his arm fell off and he missed a year and a half. And it was kind of like, oh, geez, is this guy ever going to come back? Like, he comes into spring training and he's competing for a job with Francisco Liriano, who's, you know, like 39 years old at the time. So it kind of seems like, you know, the expectations weren't all too high for Tim Mayza. But he comes back and now he's unhittable. I mean, David Phelps has a Tyler Chatwood-esque inning where he comes in and walks two guys on what was it, 8 consecutive balls. Just one of those weird meltdown innings. And then Tim Mayza just comes in and blows him away. That's I don't know if there's any comment to really be added here, but it's unbelievable how this guy has just come up and turned into a weapon all of a sudden.
If you went back to like May 2021 and just looked up the name Mayza on a Twitter search and the amount of times you would see DFA paired with that last name, it's insane. I think if I remember last year, he started like okay for a few weeks and then he had like a meltdown, I don't know, 3 weeks, and maybe it feels exaggerated just because it was experiencing that while the rest of the team was constantly melting down as well. But yeah, May, June, whenever it was, he had a really rough stretch. And probably a good reminder for people who are listening right now to not get over eager with the word DFA, or the three words designated for assignment, because we're so quick to just be like, oh, get rid of them, DFA them. And you need to understand, like with relief pitchers, there's so much volatility there. And if you're off a little bit for a brief stretch, that will skew numbers so significantly. And yet since that time, whenever he had his, you know, kind of early season turnaround last year, he has been incredible. And man, since then he's walked less than 2 per 9, struck out a batter per inning. Is he the second most confident reliever you have right now behind Romano?
And
I was just gonna say, I don't think there's that big of a gulf or separation between him and Romano at this point. So yeah, he's a great weapon. I hope he can stay healthy. It was great to see him stay healthy most of last year. And I hope that continues, because he's turned into like an elite high end lefty reliever. which the Jays lack, right? They you look at Barucci and that's hit or miss, both injuries and performance. And yeah, like having just one lefty there that you really can believe in, that's a lot of strain and stress on Mays' arm, I can imagine, but he keeps delivering.
Hey, if you want a lefty to rely on, they've signed Derek Holland to a minor league contract today. Or Wednesday, sorry.
Yeah, I'm going to predict a 6 ERA in Buffalo. So I'm going to say if we see Derek Holland, it'll be like the Casey Lawrence call up today where the Jays are like, we need length for 2 days in case
we're Tom Malone situation
here. Destroyed and somebody we're very comfortable DFAing within a couple days. Right this after I say that you shouldn't be DFAing too quickly. But yes, Derek Holland is the type of arm that you're very quick to DFA if
he's the he's of the ilk of perhaps like the Nick Teppish. That's a pull.
That's a heck of a pull, and there's far too many of those names. But yes,
2017, 18, 19 names like that. Yes. Zach Godley.
We went through the ringer there for a few years.
Trivia question answers, man. Anyway, so speaking of the DFA, kind of the sad news today, as you said, Casey Lawrence is added to the 40-man roster, and then in order to make room, Gatsuki Kato got designated for assignment, which is kind of a sad thing to see. He kind of endeared himself as a fan favorite in Toronto, and we saw him get his first hit, and it's kind of it's sad for him to see this kind of dream come to an end right here. But do you think it would be shocking at all if someone grabbed him on waivers, or is he just going to go back down to Buffalo?
Nothing would surprise me, but yeah, I expect him to be in Buffalo. He might even have the ability to elect free agency following this. I'd have to look into that. But yeah, I mean, he's an org guy, roster filler. Sometimes these guys, you know, find a way to endear themselves to the fan base, and it gets you a little bit attached to them, and you kind of think maybe they have one or two big hits or a nice defensive play, and you've got all these fuzzy memories about them without remembering that, yeah, they're not all that great of a baseball player. But yeah, he's nice org depth, right? And if they can get him back in Buffalo, that's a win for the Jays. His backstory is, you know, kind of interesting. I tweeted about this the other day, but there's this projection system that Fangraphs used to have. There's a guy named Chris Mitchell, who I believe works for the Brewers now. But he developed this like minor league projection system where using just historical data of performance in minor leagues at different age ranges and stuff like that, he put a percentage of likelihood of a player reaching the big leagues and then percentage of them becoming like an average player and that type of thing. And he named his system Kato, K-A-T-O-H, which I just assumed was an acronym for something. And it was literally after Gosuke Kato.
Why?
Because he was in the minors at that time. When the system was developed, that's when Kato was just drafted, and Chris Mitchell thought his profile was really interesting as a hitter. Huh. And he seemed like a fringe, like unlikely to make it. And for whatever reason, he just decided, hey, this is what I'm going to name my projection system after.
That's interesting.
I think he tweeted about it the other day too. It was cool when he got called up and when he got his first hit. And I think he put 27.3% chance his system said on him making the big league. So he's like, yeah, I'm so excited to be proven wrong in that way. But anyways, long-winded answer there, a little bit of, I was shocked to learn that because I remember that projection system. I quite enjoyed it before I got, you know, ripped away from Fangraphs once Chris Mitchell got hired by a team. But yeah, he's a likable guy, hopefully ends up in Buffalo. But one thing to note is Kevin Biggio got to be removed from the 40-man roster because of his, COVID leave status. So he needs to be added back too. So if Kato wasn't going to go because of, you know, the need for a length arm like Casey Lawrence right now, he was going to go when Kevin came back anyways. So maybe a few days earlier than expected. But yeah, I mean, this is coming soon, and that's probably Casey Lawrence's future as well once Kevin's ready.
Yeah, that would make sense. So speaking, I'm going to skip ahead now too, because there's one more thing I want to talk about before we get into next up. But I want to look at these questions people have asked you from the Twitter account. And there's one guy who says, should Zimmer never bat again, Bradley Zimmer? Should he never bat again for the Blue Jays? Sorry, specifically, never. Not
the
never.
Bradley Zimmer, who we have seen is the worst hitter in the history of baseball. Shockingly, I was surprised by this. I wanted to look it up. I'm like, okay, so like, what would the Jays have seen offensively in Zimmer? Not that they probably saw much. I think they liked his speed and his
drafted him too, right?
Defense, right? Yeah.
They drafted him.
The profile there was something the team didn't have: elite speed, elite defense, and center field. So for that reason, it made sense. Bradley Zimmer had a 99 weighted runs created plus against right-handed pitchers last year, like in a large sample of at bats. So I'm thinking, like, man, if the Jays somehow got that out of him, like, you can be an absolute nothing against lefties. But what he's supposed to be capable of doing is taking walks, hitting for occasional power against right-handed pitching, enough so that he's a borderline league average bat. On your positive side of the platoon split, you should be a better than league average hitter. You'd want to be. So I'm not saying he's some great hitter or has shown it to be in the past. But Bradley Zimmer against righties being a league average hitter, well, again, being base running, speed, defense, all that stuff, is a valuable piece to have on a 26-man roster. The Bradley Zimmer we've been able to watch is not even close to that. He's, you know, the worst hitter in baseball, like I said. So, yeah, I can't imagine he's long for the team. I feel for the guy. He looks miserable. Like, you watch him and he looks lost, right? Lost. Like, he does not know what he's doing up at the plate. And I got empathy for guys like that. Like, he obviously doesn't want this to be happening. There's no evidence he's not working extremely hard to fix it, but it's just not happening. And it is ugly every single time. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't long for the roster. With that being said, again, you know, I don't think the team will be quick to DFA him just based exclusively on this. I think there's a larger body of data and history and stuff like that that will dictate some of that decision-making. But yeah, this is a team that is in win now mode, so they need to make win now decisions. And I wouldn't be, you know, shocked if he found his way off the roster at some point the next month.
So the other interesting thing I wanted to bring up is this super random tweet out of the blue from Buster Olney, and he's getting the content wheel spinning. And it's very early to be doing this, but I appreciate it, because it gives us something to talk about in kind of a weird zone for content during the NHL playoffs. He says, total speculation at this point, but this would be a nice trade match later this season between a team rebuilding and a team trying to win and desperately in need of more lineup balance. The Nationals, Josh Bell to the Blue Jays. What do you think about that? Because we all had kind of told ourselves it was a foregone conclusion. The Blue Jays lefty bat and the new profile, the contact hitting guy, high average guy, was going to be Jose Ramirez. But then he went and signed a contract extension in Cleveland, completely fucked those whole plans. So now we got to find a new guy to obsess about. Is Josh Bell that guy?
I don't know if Josh Bell is a guy you would want to obsess about. With that being said, he is a good single year roster fit for the Blue Jays for sure. Obviously being a first baseman, that kind of casts him to DH duties more often than not. But yeah, he's a solid bat, right? Like right now he's had a great start to the season. He'd be the best hitter on the Blue Jays based on his numbers in the first month. He's got a 193 wins weighted runs created plus, but that's fueled by a 403 batting average on balls in play. So he's lucky. He's been very lucky with his performance so far this year. But yeah, he's a switch hitter with, you know, 27 home runs last year, 37 in 2019 in Pittsburgh too, which is a, you know, very much a hit, pitcher's park. So he's got big power. A really nice thing about what he's kind of become as a hitter in the last couple of years, he's striking out 12% of the time this year while walking 14%. So he's walking more than he's striking out, which again, a nice profile to have. And he's kind of improved on that every year that he's been in the big leagues for the most part. So yeah, he's a good fit. He'd be a great guy to fit the Zach Collins role, because the Zach Collins.
Whoa! Slow down. Are we jumping off the Zach Collins bandwagon here?
Are you sure about that? I think there's reason to maybe like be leaning off the side of the bandwagon, ready to take that final step off of it.
Because I was prepared to write a think piece about how Zach Collins is of the same ilk as Justin Smoke. They were both high draft picks.
I will read it.
I don't know if I believe it, but I was going to say it. Yeah. I was going to say it out loud. I was going to put it out there.
Yeah,
he's gonna manifest it.
I'm gonna say, Zach Collins may not be long for the roster. He can be sent down to AAA, so that's part of that too. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, we all know the Jays could use another effective left-handed hitter. I think it's overblown that this is some sort of must for the team to be good or make the playoffs or anything like that. I think what a really prime example of that is Espinal versus Biggio. Who would you rather have in the lineup right now?
Ooh, that's a tough one. No, it's definitely Espinal. We've been pumping Espinal's tires on this thing.
Exactly. Too. And yet Biggio's a left-handed hitter. So you've got these two guys who play the same position.
Biggio can't call him a hitter if he doesn't.
Performance in the vast. Yeah, that's very true. And I'm not calling them comparable at all. But my point there is you don't want to start Biggio just because he's left-handed. So Espinal has proven to be very valuable despite the fact that he is a right-handed hitter. So you don't need left-handed hitter to be good. It would be helpful to have more balance, a little bit more platoon advantage at times. And Josh Bell is a great fit. So like you said, thank you, Buster Olney, for generating the content for us. This is nice and early. But look, it is never too early for transaction season. Transactions are amazing. Transactions are so much fun. And let's talk about it nice and early. Speculation is a beautiful thing in baseball.
Hey, you know what else it's not too early for? It's not too early to start a narrative that there's a player who got away. So we've been talking about the Blue Jays needing a big lefty bat in the middle of their lineup. And meanwhile, today for the Milwaukee Brewers, Rowdy Tellez hit his sixth home run of the season, a grand slam.
Very happy for Rowdy. I am happy for our thick son. Yeah, I want to see him do well. He was, at the time, an awkward roster fit for the Blue Jays, which is kind of funny because now we're talking about, and we spent all offseason talking about acquiring a left-handed first baseman, whereas like Rowdy didn't fit the roster as a left-handed first baseman.
We were always looking for that lefty bat to play a different position, right? Like that's why we were also crazy about Jose Ramirez.
Oh, yeah. And that's what made him such an exceptional fit.
That's why Rowdy couldn't fit is because they like rotating the DH.
Yeah, and really, it is hard to carry two first base only guys, and what that mean. And if they're the kinds of players whose bats should be in the lineup most days, then yes, it clogs the DH position where you want to have George Springer getting DH days. You want to have Alejandro Kirk. You'd figure, entering the season, you'd figure you'd want to have Alejandro Kirk getting a bunch of DH days because of the bat we expect him to be. So. Yeah, Rowdy always was an awkward fit. With that being said, I mean, his performance this year is what it is. Good for him. And it would be very nice to be watching him put up seven dingers and hitting the crap out of the ball in this lineup. But I'm happy for him. And he's always an easy guy to root for. And I hope he keeps doing well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We all love Rowdy. I'm not complaining about that trade last year either. I think it was a reasonable move. Anyways, that's a lot of very random middle topics to talk about. So let's head into the final section of the podcast, which is the looking ahead section brought to you by PointsBet Canada. We are going to talk a little bit about betting on the podcast. No, we're not. Neither of us bet, so none of us have anything interesting to say. I put $10,000 down on the Blue Jays winning the World Series. I think they're great. And they're going to do it. I didn't actually do that, but there's my PointsBet ad read. I'm sorry. This is why we need Tyler here. He's way better at this. But anyways, if you're inclined to betting and you're into that kind of thing, head over to PointsBet Canada. The Blue Jays are now off to Cleveland to face Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins' best friends, the Guardians. They love that organization more than the Blue Jays, so I've been told. But anyways, off to Cleveland we go. It's going to be a four-game series where we're seeing pretty much the entire Blue Jays starting rotation, minus Kikuchi, who pitched on Wednesday. It's going to be Jose Barrio starting off against Aaron Civale. It's then Kevin Gausman versus Shane Bieber, former Cy Young winner. Then it's Ross Stripling versus Tristan McKenzie and Alek Manoah at the end versus Zach Plesac. Cleveland's been kind of an interesting team this year. They are, after splitting a doubleheader with San Diego today, they are now 11-13. But the thing with them is that their offense has actually been better than their pitching. Cleveland ranks sixth in Major League Baseball in terms of runs per game, whereas they're just slightly below league average with a 3.87 earned run average. So what do we think from Cleveland? Do we think that this is a series where you take three of four? Are we happy with a split? What are the expectations?
It's a four-game series against a not bad team on the road. So in that case, honestly, I'm happy with a split anytime they can achieve that. They're an interesting team. It is always nice when you can play against the team that has played a doubleheader the day before the series starts, because they had a lot of bullpen innings today, and their second game actually went into extra innings. So they pitched 20 total innings today, or sorry, 19 total innings today. We won't get Cal Quantrill, who pitched one of today's games. You mentioned Zach Plesac. He pitched today as well. So Quantrill and Plesac started today. So they either one of them goes on short rest, which I doubt. So it might be a bit of an unknown now or up in the air who starts on the Sunday.
Probably game. A bullpen day then, I would assume.
Yeah. So again, something that hopefully works in the Blue Jays' favor. A very weird team in the fact, Owen Miller. Owen Miller.
Don't know who that is.
Crap out of the ball for a Cleveland. He's their four hole hitter. He has an 1100 OPS. Okay. Putting that into perspective, George Springer has like an 870 OPS. Owen Miller. That's not a real name. They've been hitting the ball much better than you would expect them to. And that's with Franmil Reyes not hitting. So Owen Miller has a 194 weighted runs created plus this year. 194.
He's not even their best hitter right now. Their best hitter right now is Jose Ramirez. He's got a 1.128 OPS.
It's a good team.
Oh, my goodness.
There's
Stephen Kwan guy, too. He hits everything.
Yeah, he's a rookie. He's an interesting – he's a high batting average, low power output rookie outfielder for them. So, yeah, they're an interesting offense. Josh Naylor, Canadian boy, he's hitting well this year, too. I'm curious to see what this offense looks like in person. I'm just looking at their box score from today, and Luke Maley has a 1000 OPS. So I'm going to guess that the sample size is about 8 at bats to get him there. And that's how he's achieving those numbers.
He goes on hot streaks.
He does go on hot streaks.
Yeah, he goes on hot streaks.
But even those hot streaks, I'm going to say, are about 8 at bats long. So
I remember that it was in 2017. He went nuclear for like 3 days and he had 2 walk-offs and like back to back or something.
Yeah,
it's something chaotic like that.
Good to be Luke Maley, just hanging around, having his 3 days a year where he's hot and effective and carrying it through to a minor league contract. We're called the next year. So yeah, they're an interesting team. I mean, in my head, I think of them as a pitching only team. I don't have much of an opinion on some of these big bats or these big numbers they're putting up this year, other than it'll be interesting to see them and hopefully they come down to earth in time for this series. Overall 10-13 record. So, you know, they're not all that, great, or I guess 11-13 after the second game. It's nice to avoid Quantrill, like I said, but you're getting, you know, Beaver and Savali. So
Savali's got an ERA of 10.67.
We're early enough in the year where there's just some weird numbers out there, man.
But that's really bad.
It's bizarre. Anthony Ghost pitched today for Cleveland.
We're going to see Anthony Ghost in the series.
He's going to strike out Bradley Zimmer. Absolutely.
Oh, no.
Guaranteed left on left violence. It'll be interesting to see this Cleveland team. It's nice to get out of the – it definitely does feel like a little bit of a, you know, come down off the difficult schedule the Jays have had to date. So, win two is fine. If you can find a way to steal three, I mean, that's awesome. And obviously that's what you hope for, but at least two, you know, you should be feeling all right about that going into the off day on Monday. First off day in 21 days.
So I'm looking at Aaron Civale's page here and his games, and he's been real bad. So if the Jays don't go ahead and have an explosive offensive game on Thursday, I'm going to be upset, because in his last two outings, they've gone 3 and 4 innings. He allowed 6 runs in both. So
it's time. It's time to start hitting and score more than 2 or 3 runs in a ball game. I'm with you there.
What I want is for Teoscar Hernandez to get activated from the injured list to come into the lineup on Thursday, and for the Jays to put up 15 runs.
Yeah, I'm ready for that. Hey, I got something to throw out there. Just a little bit of AL East joy we can take. Boston took a 5-4 lead into the ninth tonight. A 4-3 lead into the ninth. Gave up the tying run to the Angels, and it is the 10th inning now, and the Angels scored 6 runs in the 10th inning. So I'm just enjoying that box score right now. Watching the Red Sox at Fenway get destroyed for 6 runs in the 10th inning of a game where they were 1 strike away from winning in the ninth. Feels good. I like that.
That's fun.
When that happens, there's a lot of optimism amongst the Red Sox Twitter, I was noticing today. So I'm very much enjoying. It's good to check in on that box score and smile a little bit.
Yeah, that's fun. I feel like they had such a bullshit season last year. They massively overachieved. Not only did they massively overachieve in the season, they reached the American League Championship Series. And it's like, you're not good enough for that. You need to really crash down here in 2022.
Yeah, I'm pretty comfortable calling them the fourth best team in the AL East, and not exclusively based on the fact that that's what the record puts them at right now. Their roster, their roster is a rung below the Yankees and Red Sox. The Yankees and Rays and the Jays, obviously. So
hold on. Yeah. Now, speaking of that, since we're having this conversation, we can finish up on this note. You have the Orioles at 5, the Red Sox at 4. Do you have the Rays at 3?
I don't. They're heating up. Not played the Rays yet. Yeah, they're heating up. I can't say I've watched a lot of Rays yet this year. They've had pitching injuries and stuff like that. Like I don't feel like they're a terrifying roster, but they're a good roster. And then they're terrifying because they're the Rays. And we've talked about that a number of times in past podcasts. I wouldn't be shocked to see any of the Blue Jays, Rays, Yankees win the division. Hopefully it's the Jays. And I really like the Jays' chances to do so. I wouldn't be shocked to see the Rays be a little aggressive at the trade deadline, a little bit more so this year than in years past. But it feels like, a three-team race with the Red Sox kind of on the periphery of that.
But you're not gonna comfortably say you think either the Yankees or the Blue Jays are number one. We've seen the Yankees 7 times this year. You think they're better than the Jays or not?
Right now, yes, but like as far as complete rosters, what I would expect, that type of thing, I would lean the direction of the Jays. Like I said, I like the Yankees pitching a lot, which means I hate the Yankees pitching. But yes, I like the Jays roster better than the Yankees.
Yeah, the Yankees are a better team this year than they were last, I think. The Yankees I find to be quite intimidating. I'm not looking forward to seeing the Rays, but I am looking forward to seeing Cleveland. I'm looking forward to the Jays putting up 15 runs tomorrow, as I predicted. Or I guess that would be today because it's Wednesday night, but it's going to be Thursday right away. Anyways, I'm not making any sense now. I got to go tune into an Edmonton Oilers hockey game. Hopefully that goes well for me.
Enjoy. Survive it.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everyone. Please follow Jays Nation on Twitter. Follow BK. Follow me, Coom. Best wishes.
Thanks for tuning in to Blue Jays Nation Radio, a member of the Nation Network of podcasts and delivered by DoorDash. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.